This is Pure Decking show number 399 for Thursday, July the 9th, 2020. This is the show about stuff that interests me, like information security, bringing the game, and the fact that I forgot to write a new joke for the intro. I'm Morps, and tonight I have Aryu. What's up, Aryu?
Welcome to me. It's good to be back. 2 week hiatus.
Yeah, does anybody know who kidnapped Madman and possibly where he's tied up? Because we can't find him.
Oh, hopefully he's outside doing my yard work. I've been doing for the last couple of weeks. House renovations and all.
Yeah. Well, you never know. But it is nice when you can get all that shit done.
Oh, dude, place is a fucking a wreck. I was meant to have concrete poured today. It rained the last couple of days. So.
No, that'll do it.
Which means I didn't have to get on the jackhammer last Friday.
I can respect that.
Yeah, fun and games of fucking real estate, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Who wants to be an adult, dude? Fuck, all you do is wash clothes constantly, do the washing up, fucking renovate the house. It's a lot of work. That's before you even earn a paycheck.
Nothing's more fun and or sucks quite as bad as owning a house.
Yep. So. I never wanted to do it, but yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's not like I can travel overseas right now where I'm fucking meant to be. Meant to be doing this shit live.
So... Anyways, turn this damn thing off. This is distracting. Anyways, let's get to the first story here. This is the one you sent me. It's from ABC News, the Australian version. Dutch police find torture chamber with dentist chair after encrypted phones are cracked. This is the story we did last week about the encrypted phone provider getting popped by the police and how they're starting to arrest people. Pretty sure this one, as well as the next story I have, are related to that. Shipping container, which had been converted into a torture chamber, complete with a dentist chair, pliers, scalpels, and handcuffs, has been found by Dutch police. I mean, this is just pure nightmare fuel.
It is.
I mean, it really is.
It is, and after we do the show, I'll tell you about some stuff I was listening to last night, different podcast. And, dude, that was nightmare fuel and a half. If anyone's curious, just have a look into the Smiling Man murders.
Jeez. Six men have been arrested following the grim finding. Authorities said police conducted the raid before the chamber was used.
Oh, shit.
How do they know that? I mean, bleach is a thing. It's a little harder to get these days, but it's still a thing. The discovery was made last month by officers investigating leads generated by data from encrypted phones called EncroChat phones allegedly used by criminals. Police say they were tipped off by messages from an EncroChat phone, including photos of the container and the dentist chair with belts attached to the arms and foot supports. I mean, it's nightmare fuel, but the thing is, you can get a dentist chair on eBay. They're not that expensive, really.
Yeah, but in a soundproof shipping container?
I mean, okay, yeah, that's true.
Six of them?
I mean, you can get a dentist chair for about, I'm just looking on eBay now, looks like about $1,000-ish for you know, they get up there, but yeah, you can get a used one. So that's actually not even that high end of a one. It looks like one just they found. Of course, the bright, shiny walls are Actually, that's all aluminum foil. That's just large sheets of aluminum foil.
It's tearaway.
Yeah, so that they could.
That's what it is.
Yeah, bag. Well, why bother? It's a shipping container. Lose it off the coast somewhere. Seawater will do the rest. Fuck.
Yeah. I'm just going to throw this out there, Morps. Okay, so Ghislaine Maxwell was arrested last week as well. I'm not saying it's related, you know.
But it did happen.
It gets the old noggin jogging, if you know what I mean.
I know what you mean. The message is called The Warehouse, The Treatment Room, and the EBI, a reference to a top security Dutch prison. Messages also revealed identities of potential victims who were warned and went into hiding, police said. On June 22nd, police arrested 6 men on suspicion of crimes, including preparing kidnappings and serious assault. In total, police found 7 shipping containers at a warehouse in Wausau Plantage, a small village in southwestern Netherlands, close to the border with Belgium. 6 of the containers were intended as cells in which people could be tied up, and 1 container was intended as a torture chamber, Andy Craig, head of the police National Investigation Service, said. A search of the containers uncovered bags containing tools including hedge cutters, scalpels, and pliers. The tools were likely intended to torture victims or at least put them under pressure, a police statement said. In searches of other properties, including what police described as a base for the criminals near the port city of Rotterdam, officers found police uniforms and body armor, stolen vehicles, 25 firearms, and drugs. Court in Amsterdam ordered 6 suspects to be held for 90 days as the investigation continues. The encryption software used was recently cracked by French authorities. Detectives in the Netherlands and Britain have already arrested hundreds of suspects based on encrypted messages. Tuesday's announcement gave a chilling insight into the increasingly violent Dutch criminal underworld, which is involved in large-scale production and trafficking of drugs. Dutch police said last week their investigations were based off millions of messages from EncroChat phones, led to the arrest of more than 100 suspects. Police say they also seized more than 8,000 kilograms of cocaine and 1,200 kilograms of crystal meth, as well as the dismantling of 19 synthetic drug labs. So, this is just what they're finding now. Imagine how long this shit's been used since they obviously know how to build these things.
Oh, dude, this encryption system's gone down? The new one's already up.
Oh, of course it is. But, and there's a reason I talk about that. This is horrifying. This is pure nightmare fuel. This is Breaking Bad level bullshit, right?
Oh, no, this...
This is way worse.
This is Apocalypse Now.
There you go.
Know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is Colonel Kirk's fucking losing his shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I generally don't like this true crime shit. Because I know what the world's like. I don't need to know specific details. You know what I mean? But this shit is just too much detail. I'd like to know the nationalities involved. You know, is this the Russians or which gang is this?
Which group? The Dutch. So
yeah, I don't know it. I've never heard of a Dutch criminal syndicate before.
I'm sure there is one. I mean,
I'm sure there is, and they're obviously highly specialized in the way of torture.
Want nothing to do with them, obviously. I mean, they're building torture chambers. I'd like to stay away from them.
But I mean, you very rarely hear of Eastern European gangs, you know, like because they're so secretive.
Oh, sure.
So
the reason I wanted to talk about this story, besides just the sheer ick factor and, you know, when you send it to me, all of this comes back to them cracking this network of encrypted phones.
Yeah.
You're going to see every government out there using stories like this and saying, this is why we need government mandated backdoors into encryption.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, mm-hmm. I have talked at length on this show about why that doesn't work. You cannot have a true end-to-end encrypted system, which everybody gave Zoom shit for the last few months, without the ability for criminal organizations to abuse it. You cannot have it if you get mandate government backdoors or government management of keys or government access to backdoor keys or however you want to phrase it, you are going to get the systems cracked. You won't have encrypted messages. Somebody's going to have backdoors into that shit. If you have true end-to-end encryption, the system can be abused. Now, I tend to err on the side of freedom as opposed to safety, so I'd rather have my encrypted systems and just have the police trying to crack them as often as they need to for criminal organizations. But they're going to be pointing at stories like this and saying, this is why we need backdoors into encryption. And I don't even care about the whole lawful warrant thing on this argument. It's the fact that it's math. It doesn't work that way. And just mandating that computer makers invent a way to give them a backdoor, there's not a way to do it safely.
Am I wrong in the story that these phones came directly? You couldn't just like buy the phone and then purchase a plan. You had to buy the phone from the group?
Yeah, these were set up. These were devices sold as an encrypted device. They were set up on their network specifically because their network was supposed to be secure, and they already had all of their encryption preloaded on these devices. Basically, these were criminal BlackBerries, if you want a model to compare it to.
So at the end of the day, even with government-mandated backdoors and everything, if someone's running their own phone service, they can't do shit.
You can charge the service for not providing a government mandated backdoor, but I mean, that's about it.
If the government doesn't know the service exists.
Yeah, that's what it is. The moment they become aware of it, they go to the company and say, where's our backdoor? Poof, company disappears. They pull a lava mail and just shut down overnight or whatever it was. And just say,
you know what? I would probably consider buying one of these phones.
Well, and here's the thing, is you can go to Apple, you can go to Google, you can go to Facebook, you can go to whatever big tech company and mandate backdoors in the communication means, right? There's open source software, encryption software out there. SSL exists, and if you use reasonably high keys, there's enough open source software out there that somebody with a little bit of time can cobble together an encrypted messaging system, or you could go use existing ones like Matrix, Signal, well, Signal might be, I don't know. Some of these bigger named apps are a little bit less, if you're really wanting to go for that kind of dark web. But, yeah, you could absolutely build this stuff open source from the ground up. Build a phone image. Get a supply of cheap phones from China. Flash them with your image. And set up a new service doing this just on prepaid cards, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this is when they cracked. There's probably thousands of these underground phone services out there. And I don't even know that they're all for criminal activity. I mean,
no, I don't think
I'm sure that there are several that are set up specifically for that. But there's probably a lot of them out there that are just people who want private phones.
Yeah. I mean, look, BBC and The Guardian have been caught phone hacking before.
Oh, sure.
For just your privacy.
Well, you do. You stand up a collection of servers. You just do Amazon nowadays. And, any cloud provider or just a server somewhere on the internet. Have that be your back-end comms. Have all your phones pre-set up with the software to route through that. Done.
Yeah. Yep.
You only sell the hardware, so you can do the whole hardware encrypted key thing, and you're laughing. Now, yeah, you ever get popped and the police get that server, well, you're done. But, you just ghost the whole thing. And apparently when EncroChat was popped, we had it in the story last week, they did send a message out to everybody, hey, we've been compromised, destroy your phones.
Why is it the companies that are on the shadiest end of the shit are always the ones who are so transparent? Shut it down, fellas, we're fucked. Where Equifax is like, fuck it, we won't tell them for 12 months. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Why are the dodgiest bastards out there the quickest ones to admit they've got a problem?
Because their clients are the ones who build torture drink chambers.
Exactly. So what do we have to do? We have to get the heads of Equifax in Minecraft and Show them how to build a proper barn. If you follow me. Yeah, it's just disappointing that, you know, the mafia is more credible than fucking banking sector.
You know, my understanding is the Japanese mafia has been like that for a long time, that they're way more trustworthy than most of their businesses.
Yeah, the only problem is that, you know, making a mistake is you don't just see HR for that issue.
No, no, you tend to lose digits, is my understanding.
Yeah, HR is not really 2020 cutting edge, if you know what I mean.
Oh, your feelings were hurt and you feel harassed and you feel oppressed. I'm just, you had to think of an SJW term. You feel oppressed? Yeah, just come with us to HR. Okay, why is the HR department in a concrete factory? Don't worry about it. We're going to take care of the problem. We're going to solve the problem.
Pay me the fucking money. Give me the money.
Get the Mr. Rogers clip from Robot Chicken. Solving the problem. Anyways, probably along the same lines here. This is from Ars Technica. FBI nabs Nigerian business scammer who allegedly cost victims millions. U.S. government has gained custody of a Nigerian man who is accused of participating in a massive fraud and money laundering operation. The defendant, Ray Hush Puppy Abbas.
Love the name.
How do you get a nickname of Hush Puppy?
Gangster, man.
I mean, that's either a really hardcore gangster or you let your mother pick the name. I mean, or you really, really like Captain D's. Abbas has amassed 2.4 million followers on Instagram, where he flaunts his access to luxury cars, designer clothing, and private jets. The feds say that he gained his wealth by defrauding banks, law firms, and other businesses out of millions of dollars. He was arrested last month by authorities in the United Arab Emirates for where he had been living. The FBI's criminal complaint details how the government obtained a wealth of information tying Abbas to his alleged crimes. Abbas was an avid user of American technology platforms, including Instagram, Gmail, iCloud, and Snapchat. Accounts on these platforms were all registered using a handful of common email addresses and phone numbers. Abbas's main email account, rayhushpuppy@gmail.com, included a copy of Abbas's lease at a luxury hotel in Dubai. So a dude was living in a hotel and scans of various government issue photo IDs under a boss's name. Why would you keep that in your email account?
I have no idea.
Why would you scan your ID? That's weird.
Why would you go to a country that has extradition laws with America?
Yeah. Assumed you didn't get caught, I guess.
Ethiopian, right?
Nigerian.
He's not welcome in the UAE anyway.
Abbas, well, he had money, so who cares?
Oh, they do care. Yeah.
Well, maybe that's why he's got getting extradited as opposed quietly hushed out the back.
I mean, you don't get any news out of the Emirates places like that because there's no free press. They essentially... I don't even know what they are at this point, but they're
monarchy.
Pseudo ethno state monarchy, something like that.
Let's just borrow some language from our president, the shithole country.
I don't think it's a shithole. It's not a shithole. I mean,
their government kind of is. Yeah,
I don't know, man. There are bigger shitholes right now than that. I wouldn't have gone there if I had millions of dollars, if you know what I mean.
No, I don't think I would either. Doesn't seem like the safest place to live.
I mean, no one's getting their money back.
Oh, of course
not. I'm telling you right now, yeah.
Well, you know what I do for a living.
Yeah.
Nobody gets their money back.
The moment
the scammers get the money, it's distributed. It's gone.
Yeah.
And they burn 75 to 90% of it muling it, trying to launder it. So, you know, they may steal $100,000 from a bank. They'll get five or six, usually. It sounds like this guy was trying to get a lot more of it. That might be why he got caught.
Yeah, it could be it, too. And the fact that he's using Gmail accounts.
Yeah. That, you know, if you're using Gmail accounts, that's fine, but you probably shouldn't be using, you know, your real identity as your primary Gmail account for your scams. You should probably be setting up burners and shit like that, which is easy enough to do. I mean, it's a fucking Gmail account. You go in, make up some info, use a name generator, and you've got a Gmail account. You know, you can set up hundreds of the things, and people write scripts to do it for spamming all the damn time. Google's gotten pretty good at shutting them down, but still. Let's see. A boss is accused of participating in a number of business email compromise scams by posing as trusted employees or customers of the target organization. A boss and his fellow fraudsters allegedly tricked employees into sending large sums to bank accounts they controlled. Yeah, these scams are they're pretty interesting in how often they work. So they say they try to trick employees. So what they do, it depends. But like if it's a bank, one of the common ones is they will get in through whatever method, phishing usually, they'll get into like a mortgage broker's email account. And rather than just immediately doing something with that account, they'll usually, I mean, there's a couple of different people who, you know, different ways of doing it, but what they usually do is they'll set up an auto forward rule to forward everything to usually another compromised email account, or they'll just log into it occasionally and watch and read through everything. And what they're waiting for is some sort of a business deal, a mortgage usually, but, you know, there's lots of them. You know, something where somebody is going to wire a lot of money. And right before the transaction happens, they'll say, oh, by the way, we've changed banks. Here's our new wire transfer instructions.
Yeah.
And they will send that either from the hacked email account, but not as often. Often they don't. Often they set up another email account that looks like the hacked email account. So the ones I've seen were actually Gmail accounts where they would set up the email address, the full email address of, you know, so it would be mortgage broker. They'd skip the at symbol, obviously, you know, mortgagebroker.companyname.com@gmail.com. But then they'd make the display name and all that stuff look like the rest of the address, right? And they'd find real wire transfer instructions from the compromised email account. And they'd just Photoshop the bank account number to be whatever bank account these guys, you know, wanted you to wire the transfer money to instead of the legitimate business deal, right? So they'll send that PDF. Usually it's a PDF. They'll send that, you know, from either the fake Gmail account or the actual compromised account. They usually don't want to send it from the compromised account because that sometimes can, you know, things show up in the sent email folder that can indicate what's going on.
Yeah, tip off.
Yeah. So a lot of times they don't want to be in that compromised account for very much because they don't want to tip off the company they're in there because unlike end users, companies tend to read their logs or at least have, you know, user behavior monitoring set up so that if somebody's logging in from someplace weird, like, say, the UAE, you know, it might set off a flag. Somebody go look at that account. So that's why they usually will set up a forwarding rule or something like that. A lot of email companies, or a lot of accounts, a lot of companies now have rules on where email can be forwarded to, trying to watch for shit like that. So,
at least they're trying.
Well, they're trying. So a lot of times they'll go for smaller mortgage brokers, things like that, where they can play man in the middle between large banks and people doing deals. The other one they'll do is, well, and, you know, once, if the bank wires the money for a mortgage to the wrong bank account, when they go to close the house, the receiving bank will say, "We never got the money. What's up?" And of course, the bank that sent them, you know, that got defrauded, will say, "Well, we sent it." And then that's usually the first indication, and that's usually days later. And wires, once they go, I mean, these aren't credit card transactions, right? Once a wire goes, it's gone. That money is gone.
Yeah.
And usually the scammers are watching that account. The money moment the money hits that account, they're bouncing it to another account. And then they'll start distributing it out. And there's all kinds of networks and things about how they get that money out. And sometimes they'll buy up cryptocurrency. Back in the day, one of the things they used to do is they would go into Second Life and they would buy up, you know, they would set up vendors in Second Life selling like the shirts and the furniture and shit. And they'd have these accounts, you know, these compromised bank accounts go in and buy shit in Second Life from their other accounts to launder their money. I mean, there was all kinds of great shit. Another one they'd do is World of Warcraft gold. They would actually sell gold and use that to, you know, they would buy World of Warcraft gold and turn around and sell it to launder their money so that they were showing some way of integrating the money from another business thing, right?
Things like that.
Yeah. The other thing they'll do if you're doing your business email compromise is they will get into an email account, or they will get, you know, figure out through LinkedIn and shit like that the name of somebody in, say, an accounting department, or even a CTO or CSO or, you know, some other high-level, C-level employee at a company. And they'll create a fake email that says, hey, we need to pay such and such consultancy. Why haven't we paid them yet? You know, and they'll do a fake, you know, they'll do a whole conversation with somebody in their accounting department saying, hey, here's this thing. Just pay them. We got their services. You need to pay this consultancy or this service. Well, in a big enough company, a lot of times people, you know, they're like, oh, I can't call the CEO and question this. I better just do it, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So they'll pay them a couple $100,000 out as, you know, a broker or as a consultancy fee when nothing actually ever happened. And when they go trace it back, you know, they'll say, well, you told me to pay this. No, I didn't. And a lot of times they'll find it's a Gmail account that they've made look like the real account.
Yeah, same name.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, you know, especially if you've got high-level employees who have common names, you can't put filters in on name display names in email, at least not easily. So it gets interesting trying to craft email rules to keep this shit out. And then, you know, you get overzealous with the email filter and your business people get all upset. It's like, you're blocking legitimate emails. So, you know.
All right, let's move to the next one.
I'm not bitter at all.
Move to the next one before you start getting a little angry.
Let's see. In one incident detailed, the FBI complained a boss and two co-conspirators allegedly defrauded a law firm in New York State. The firm needed to wire more than $900,000 on behalf of a client who's closing a real estate deal. Here we go. The fraudsters tricked a paralegal into sending email to a fake address purportedly belonging to Citizens Bank. The fraudsters responded by faxing instructions for wiring cash to an account they control. A law firm employee attempted to confirm the instructions by calling the phone number on the form. They called the phone number on the fucking form, the fake form. But that number was controlled by the scammers. Never call the number that you get in that wire transfer. Go to your Rolodex, go to your address book, get the contact information that you have on file for that company, not the one in the email you just got with the new wire transfer instructions. This stuff seems so basic, but
it works,
and it's insane. In another incident, by the time the law firm noticed the funds hadn't made it to the intended destination account, it was too late to get it back. And what they're not telling you in this is the shit fight that happens between these companies of who's at fault. Because nobody wants to eat that loss. And usually what ends up happening, the person trying to buy the property who is trying to finance a mortgage, they get left holding the bag a lot of times.
Sucks, yeah.
Now, they didn't get their collateral. They didn't get the property. So a lot of times they'll end up suing the bank saying, I don't owe this mortgage. You didn't provide what you said you were going to provide. And the bank will still try to say, well, we loaned you this money. The fact that you didn't buy the house with it, you know.
Yeah, it just turns into a legal shit show.
Oh, it really does. And it's bad.
Yep.
In another incident, an overseas bank stuffed a computer. Suffered a computer intrusion and cyber heist in which approximately 13 million euros was fraudulently wired from the victim's bank account to other accounts in the country. their accounts in other countries. So yeah, that's just flat out somebody guessed a password. Well, maybe, I don't know how they got the password. They somehow acquired a password to a bank account, just started sending the money. They just drained the account. FBI hasn't accused Abbas of personally infiltrating victim companies. Rather, his alleged role was to find bank accounts that could accept millions of dollars in stolen cash without raising red flags. Abbas provided co-conspirators with wire information for accounts in Romania, Bulgaria, Dubai, Mexico, and elsewhere. So the dude was a middleman. He was setting up the accounts and, you know, keeping a cut for himself, obviously.
It was a step up from the dude doing the scamming.
Yep. And yeah, he sounds like he was one of the mules, and he was just really successful at it. The FBI was able to obtain minute by minute documentation of Abbas' participation in these schemes via their text messages and other online communications. One key source: the FBI apparently gained access to the iPhone of an Abbas associate who was arrested at a U.S. airport last October. The Justice Department says that after arresting Abbas last month, UAE authorities expelled him to the United States, where he arrived on Thursday. He made his initial court appearance in Chicago on Friday. The FBI says the business email compromise scams by Abbas and others cost companies at least $1.7 billion in 2019 alone, and that number is way low.
Yeah.
Most companies, when this shit happens, they don't report it.
Nope.
Because if it's small enough, they will just eat it and not take the reputational hit. They'll just correctly wire the money or whatever, or just accept the loss. Because they'll just say they paid a consultant however much money and just accept the loss and never report it because they don't want to take that reputational hit. Especially a financial institution.
Considered spillage.
Basically. I'm sure that number is probably easily 10 times what the FBI has.
Yeah.
Because you got to think they're only reporting it when it's so large the company has to try to recoup it. And they're hoping to get it back, and you know that they're not. So now that we've cheered everybody up.
Yeah.
This one's from Vice. Police are buying access to hacked website data.
What?
The sale is an end run around of the usual legal processes. Hackers break into websites, steal information, and then publish that data all the time, with other hackers or scammers using it for their own ends. But breach data now has another customer: law enforcement. Some companies are selling government agencies access to data stolen from websites in the hope that it can generate investigative leads, with the data including passwords, email addresses, IP addresses, and more. So in other words, the government agencies are less interested in the breach of the website and more interested in going after whoever's data they just got.
That's can't be right.
Motherboard obtained webinar slides by a company called SpyCloud. Presented to prospective customers. In that webinar, the company claimed to empower investigators from law enforcement agencies and enterprises around the world to more quickly and efficiently bring malicious actors to justice. The slides were shared by a source who was concerned about law enforcement agencies buying access to hacked data. SpyCloud confirmed the slides were authentic to Motherboard. "We're turning the criminals' data against them, or at least we're empowering law enforcement to do that," David Endler, co-founder and chief product officer of SpyCloud, told Motherboard via phone call. The sale highlights a somewhat novel use of breach data and signals how data ordinarily associated with the commercial sector can be repurposed by law enforcement too. But it raises questions about whether law enforcement agencies should be leveraging information originally stolen by hackers. By buying products from SpyCloud, law enforcement would also be obtaining access to hacked data on people who are not associated with any criminals. The vast majority of people affected by data breaches are not criminals and would not need to follow the usual mechanisms of sending a legal request to a company to obtain user data. So, yeah, the rest of this is on and on and on about this, but pretty much, you know, you've got a couple of people arguing about whether this is a good idea or not. So SpyCloud is from what I was reading earlier, they're not so much as breaking into things themselves as they're getting the data from, you know, darknet sources, Tor, buying it from hackers themselves. So their job is, there's a lot of companies that do this where they claim they're monitoring, you know, the internet and dark websites for your data.
Yeah.
And so in this case, they're just doing that and then collecting the data and selling it to law enforcement. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah. I imagine if you wrote the right kind of scripts to watch things like Pastebin and GitHub and, you know, a couple of choice tour websites, the right IRC channels and Discord channels and, you know, a few other key sources, you could probably amass quite a bit of data to then turn around and flip and sell to people. Of course, if anybody ever figured out where you were doing this from, the they'd be going after you too. So it's an interesting game. So, also interesting abuses of systems. Or you sent me this one's from the BBC. Get the links pasted here. Smartwatch hack could send fake pill reminders to patients. and yeah, I mean, I love the picture here. It's some El Cheapo, you know, $5 off Amazon smartwatch. Take pills.
Yeah.
Smartwatch software used to help elderly patients could easily be hacked and abused, say security researchers. Some of the watches are targeted mainly at dementia patients, and a hacker could even send a reminder to take pills as often as they wanted to. The researchers said they were concerned that an overdose could easily result. The security flaw has now been fixed after they notified the Chinese company behind it, they said. However, the app that connects to these type of watches has more than 10 million downloads, the researchers say, and there's no way of knowing if it's been exploited by somebody else before being fixed. The flaw was discovered by UK security firm Pentest Partners. It was in a system called SE Tracker, used in a wide range of relatively cheap smartwatches made by several different companies and widely available online. We can make any watch reveal the position of the wearer. We can listen to the wearer without them knowing. We can also send them an alert to take medication, said Ken Murno, a partner at Pentest. The watches targeted at dementia patients could also be useful in scenarios such as the patient getting lost while out for a walk. If that happened, they could trigger a call to their carer who could track their location, the company said. The take pills notification could let a carer set the reminder from afar. This is where it all went wrong, the researchers wrote in a blog post. Anyone with some basic hacking skills could trigger the medication alerts as often as they wanted. Dementia sufferer is unlikely to remember they had already taken their medication. China-based manufacturer responded with days of being notified of the flaw and repaired it on their end, securing the system without the need for users to install any updates. Meaning what Pentest Partners actually found was an API endpoint, right? So they found a URL they could ping with the ID of a watch and make that watch pop up and say, take pills.
But there's a tiny little flaw in the story.
Go for it.
I didn't pick it up the first time. Generally, dementia patients, if are on required medication, are given that medication daily by someone else. They're not trusted to take it themselves.
Well,
and
go ahead.
Having a message on a watch saying take pills, they look at that and go, what pills? They don't know they're taking pills. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think they've made a story out of something that wouldn't really ever happen.
You're right.
It couldn't really happen because I don't think. Well, I wouldn't
know,
like
it could. It could happen. I hate to say it this way. Old people are the easiest ones to scam when it comes to technology.
I know, but if you've got to the level of dementia that you need to be constantly reminded to take stuff, you are either going to be in assisted living or have a carer, a primary carer. You're not going to be left to your own devices to take pills and shit.
I agree with you. But the thing is, it's not just old people who fall for this shit. You think of how many people you've dealt with recently who will do whatever the computer tells them to do, or somebody who claims to represent the computer will tell them to do.
Yeah. And we're looking at you, Barbara. And
it's always Barbara.
So I think there's something to the story, but I don't think you're going to be killing, you know, thousands of elderly people due to a hack.
And here's the thing. When companies do announcements like this, they're trying to make it sound as scary as possible, because what they're really doing is hoping the right businesses will see this article and solicit them to serve for service. This is an ad.
Yeah.
This is an ad for Pentest Partners. They're trying to, you know, they're putting this out saying, oh, look what we found. It's scary. It could kill grandma. And because they're trying to get attention.
Yeah.
Now, that said,
yeah, I didn't see it the first time when I read through the article.
That said, cheap Chinese electronics and badly coded apps, because you have a lot of people who do think that programming is easy. They can just go watch some YouTube tutorials, slap some code together, cut and paste it off Stack Overflow and Paste Bin, and oh, look, I've got a working app. And yeah, it probably does work. And it's probably got about 1,000 other problems with it that you don't know to look for because you haven't done the time. And I'm not saying that self-taught's bad. You know, I know a lot of really, really good people who are self-taught, but you got to put the time in and you got to be exposed to a lot of different ideas. I can't tell you the number of developers I've worked with who have never heard of the idea of a code injection. And when you say, well, what if somebody put SQL code in your web form there? Their first response is, why would somebody do that? Not, oh shit, I better do something about it.
For the lulz.
It's like, to fuck with your database. That's why they would do it. And, you know, you then show them their own web app dumping out passwords and shit from other web apps using the same database server. It's like, oh, you've got a problem. And at first it blows their mind. It's like, you can put code in there? I thought nobody would put anything but names in that field. Well, what's enforcing that? Well, it says name. Uh-huh. So, a label. That's the only thing enforcing it? So that
the one I've always run into issues with is, well, that's just you doing that. Nobody else would do a thing like that. Okay.
That's my favorite response is, well, you're a security guy. You know all this shit. Most people wouldn't do that.
It's nobody's going to do that. That's just you because you're an asshole.
I've gotten that one. Actually, I got that one. That's another story. When I was at a different job, we had a group who had decided they were going to remotely administer all of their Macs with SSH. And I said, oh, how are you going to identify what Macs on the network are yours versus just other things that show up as Macs? Oh, we're not going to. We're just going to try to log into everything over SSH with the root credential. And if it works, then it's one of ours. Are you now? So I said, give me 10 minutes and then try to log into this IP address as though it's a Mac. And he said, what do you need 10 minutes for? Because I'm going to build an SSH honeypot.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, nobody knows how to do that. I don't need to know how to do that. Look, here's instructions off Google.
Yeah.
I mean, well, why would somebody do that? Because you're logging into every fucking Mac. They're going to notice an SSH attempt on their box at some point. Somebody's going to want to see what it is.
A lot of bored people out there.
Yeah, I mean, my God.
What you've given is a generation raised on tech that can't be employed. What do you think they're going to fucking do?
So, but yeah, and then it was after that, it was, you know, well, nobody else but you would be running an SSH honeypot. Okay, sure, why not? But it was enough of an argument that they found a different way to do it.
I've got it to the point now. If they're not going to kill himself, I don't bother telling them. You know what I mean? If they're not about to cut their hand off with a power saw, I don't need to give them safety instructions anymore.
Yeah, losing a finger's a good way to learn. Speaking of the mafia. All right, move on. Next one up is from a website called SoCoolSoGood.com. And it's kind of fluff, but I kind of liked it here. A new version of the operating system that will give life to the phone or iPhone or iPad. Apps must ask for permission to track us. This is a measure that Apple has implemented to make sure apps don't track us without permissions or hide the request permission in an interface designed to make us accept it without realizing it. So, you know what? I'm not going to read this because it's kind of poorly written. But basically, they've got the story from Reuters that both Facebook and Google have complained and asked Apple to change this. And if both of those companies are complaining that Apple is making it too transparent when things are tracking you, I'd say they're probably getting it right. And if it weren't for the fact that I just switched to the Note a little while ago and, you know, want to pay that off before I switch phones again, I'd think about going back to an iPhone. Because it's like, if Apple is actually pissing off Google and Facebook when it comes to the tracking, I'd say they're getting it right.
Yeah.
Getting something right.
Anyways, I just thought that was kind of fun. The article, when I skimmed it earlier, it was fine. But now that I was reading it to read on the show, it's like, oh, this is really badly written. Let's just skip it.
Like most articles these days.
Really? It's like, what happened to editors?
I think they went out of fashion in 20.
Well, I mean, you know, the computer does spell check, right? Well, it's not just spelling you might want to look at. So anyways, this last article, of course, R, you sent me. 4G balloons, it's from BBC. 4G balloons take off over Kenya. A network of giant internet-enabled balloons from Google's sister firm Loon is to provide internet access to remote areas of Kenya. It'll provide 4G coverage so people can make voice and video calls, browse the web, email, text, and stream videos. The project was announced 2 years ago, but final sign-off from the Kenyan government has only just been given. It's now being fast-tracked to help improve communications during the coronavirus pandemic. I'm sorry. The Flu Manchu pandemic. The balloon's 4G internet service has been tested with 35,000 customers and will initially cover a region spanning 50,000 square kilometers. Eventually, 35 solar-powered balloons will be in constant motion in the stratosphere above eastern Africa. They also launched in the U.S. and make their way into Kenya using wind currents. They are launched in the U.S. and make their way into Kenya. That's kind of cool. They're going all the way from the States. Let's see. One field test of the service showed download speeds of 18.9 megabits per second and upload speeds of 4.7. So, I mean, it's not terrible.
Not the worst.
Yeah. I mean, I've had worse internet than that. Loon began using one of Google's so-called moonshot projects, in 2011. In 2018, it teamed up with Telecom Kenya to provide a commercial service. According to Loon's chief executive, Alistair Westgarth, the spread of the great sneeze forward has meant both are working as fast as we can to realize service deployment. He added the culmination of years of work and collaboration between Loon, Telecom, and the government. Telecom Kenya's chief executive, Mugo Kibati, said it was an exciting milestone for internet service provision in Africa. Internet-enabled balloons will be able to offer connectivity to the many Kenyans who live in remote regions that are underserved or totally underserved and as such remain disadvantaged. Some critics said it would have been better in another African country because Kenya already has an estimated 39 million out of a population of 48 million people online. Previously, balloons from Loon have been used during an earthquake in Peru. I would have liked a little bit more information on how long these balloons actually remain up.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
what do they do about people trying to shoot them down? Because people are assholes. Not even Kenya, dude. I mean, just people. You could let these things out over the southern United States, and you'd have had people out there shooting at them for sport.
Free tech, dude. Free tech.
I mean, I bet the solar panel on those things alone is probably pretty decent.
If I could take down a Predator drone, I would, just for the tech.
Yeah? Just for the camera out of one of those bastards.
Yeah. Just the tech, man. I don't want the explosives or anything. I just want the cool tech.
So. Anyways, let's do this. Two things for you tonight in Digital Dojo. The first is a pretty interesting little security project. It's a newer one called Netium or NetEnum. And what this guy does is you set it up on pretty much any network where you're seeing a bit of the ARP traffic, and it passively monitors for it and eventually starts extrapolating out information about each host. So the slug here from GitHub, NetNinum passively monitors the ARP traffic on the network. It extracts basic data about each active host, such as IP address, MAC address, and the manufacturer. The main objective of this tool is to find active machines without generating noise. So, yeah, pretty much the idea here is this thing just watches ARP traffic. If you're on Wi-Fi or on networks that still use hubs, or maybe just aren't, you know, using a lot of segmentation or you know, even a lot of heavy routing in their networks, you'll see a lot of that ARP traffic, at least in your subnet. And this thing gets you a list of live hosts and will dump them out. It even dumps them out in a file that Nmap can use. So that way you're not sitting there trying to discover live hosts, which can take a lot of time, and you can go straight to the enumerating what's on those hosts rather than just trying to find them. Which, for IPv4 networks, not that big of a deal. You can usually scan an IPv4 network in a relatively quick amount of time just to identify live hosts. IPv6, that's another problem. Because there's such a larger potential pool of addresses for people to use in IPv6 that identifying them all is going to be a real hassle if you're doing a network evaluation. So identifying your live hosts before you go, you know, scanning them to see what they are is a real time saver.
Sounds like it.
And this last one's another Python project off GitHub. This one's pretty cool. It's a YouTube music downloader. Now, as we were talking about earlier, these things are pretty much a dime a dozen. But what this guy does, instead of giving it a YouTube URL and just having it spit out an MP3 or M4A, you actually give it a search term. So, like, you know, they've got a demo here showing finding a Drake song. And it not only will give you a list of what it finds that are most likely the song you want, and you pick it, it then will go get the metadata out of either iTunes or some of the other online music services like Ghana and populate the metadata on the file so you can actually, you know, and it's a Python library, so you could actually hook this thing to other automations if you were just wanting to build up a local music library so you could, say, load up an MP3 player or your phone or something so you don't have to stream everything. But I thought it was pretty cool, and I could see this being used in a lot of other automation projects. So that's really all I've got tonight. I guess we're going to do a short show, but we've been doing hour and a half shows for the past several weeks, so, you know, give me a break. Of course, listen to the stream. We're always working on Peer Decking every Thursday, the Galaxy 15 radio site, the subreddit, and the IRC. And tonight, myself, Sardonyx, the bot, Psychros, DP View, and the Coffee Maker. Are you? Closing thoughts?
I'd just like to give a big congratulations to Ghislaine Maxwell for being alive for 6 days now. Let's hear. Hope you make it to 7. Some dark shit right there, man.
Wow. All right, that's enough of that.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Nose down and call it a night.
Shut up, Wesley.